This podcast is brought to you by Money Control.
Hello and welcome to Money Control. This is Priyanka Sahai and you're tuned into Setting Sail, a weekly podcast where we get you the country's best known entrepreneurs and investors to tell you their stories by themselves. In this series, the idea is to understand how these top guns negotiated the pitfalls in their lives and eventually got ahead of established legacy players. Now today we have with us Tarun Davra, Managing Director of Matrix Partners, one of the country's most active and successful venture capital funds with us. For the uninitiated, let me also tell you that Tarun was part of our esteemed jury during Money Control's flagship Wealth Creator Awards. Tarun sits on the board of multiple startups ranging from unicorns such as Ola to Practo. Thank you a lot, Tarun, for taking time out for us. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Priyanka. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So, Tarun, you know, Matrix, as we know, is known to be an entrepreneur-driven fund in more ways than one. Not only are you a founder's first VC firm, that is how you like to call yourself as, you're also a VC firm which has many entrepreneurs in the managing and founding roles itself. So how does that quite work in the favor of the fund?
So, you know, Priyanka, I've done one podcast on this and, you know, you and listeners should, you know, take a look at that. It's called Operator VC versus Investor VC.
Okay.
I will just quickly summarize, I guess, you know, some of the things that at least we see. So one is, you know, the jury is still out whether operator VCs or investor VCs are more successful. The reality is I think there are enough examples on both sides where there are people who have come from the operator background, you know, whether it's, you know, people in India like, you know, Avnish and a few others, or whether it's even in the Valley, you know, Mark Andreessen and a bunch of others who have had a, you know, successful stint as an entrepreneur,
right,
who have gone on to become VC. At the same time, even on the other side, there are several examples of people who have not sort of been on the operating side earlier, you know, right from actually journalists to, you know, bankers who have become VCs and also have been very successful.
Okay.
So at the, you know, at the outset, I would just say that I don't think there is, I wish there was a formula, but there is no sort of formula for, you know, what defines success. I will tell you the softer aspects though that do help, right? So one is that as someone who has been on the operating side, I think you can empathize a lot more with what the journey that the entrepreneur is going through, number one. Number two, in certain areas, because you have had first-hand experience with, you know, sort of, you know, doing that particular function, obviously the entrepreneur's own conviction in taking your advice, because they feel or they see you as someone who has been there and done that and has walked in their shoes for some period of time at least. I think entrepreneurs also tend to feel more comfortable because, you know, if you've built a company and you've, you know, been through a, you know, multiple org changes, or if you have been through, you know, something where, you know, you built what is known as a very good brand, obviously, you know, people, the entrepreneur also will lean on you much more for advice, right? So I think that's, you know, point number two. I think point number three is we're just, I think like an entrepreneur in all of the investments that we make, right? So first is, as you know, as part of our fund, we think of it as investing our own money, and there is a part of our own money in every fund. But we tend to think like an entrepreneur. We don't think market first. We don't look at, you know, hey, here is this market. There's a very big, you know, company in the US in this market. Maybe something similar will get created in India. That's not the way we generally think. We are trained to think much more about what is the problem. Is this a, you know, a problem for a meaningfully large set of people? And is the founding team really, really passionate about solving this problem, right? And I think if we find these three things broadly checking out, that is where we tend to lean in, because, you know, market sizes are fairly hard to estimate in anything that is apparent. There's generally multiple companies already in there. And as a VC, you are generally looking out at least a few years. Right, and generally enter the markets well before they are, while they are still nascent. And so it's very hard to estimate, you know, I think you can run all the Excel math that you want, but eventually it comes down to, you know, finding a passionate team that is going after, you know, what could be a meaningfully large problem.
Right. Okay, interesting. So technically there's no set formula, and however, I mean, there are, of course, the entrepreneurs will be finding a soft corner and would relate better to investors who've always been behind the stage and, you know, have done something on themselves, by themselves. So On that note, I would also want to understand from you, Tarun, that you are currently sitting on the board of so many companies. A bunch of them have actually gained the status of unicorns in India, such as the likes of Ola, the ride-hailing company. Now, in an era of almost free internet, according to you, what does it take to create a successful internet business in India?
I think internet is it's a channel, it's a medium, right? So the reality is, while in fact a free internet helps us in many ways, it doesn't hurt us, because just let's take a step back and see what has happened in India over the last 18 months. All of us know the impact that Jio has created. Till 18 months ago, we had a couple of hundred million internet users spending maybe an hour or two on the internet, doing less than 1 gigabyte of sort of internet a day, right? What has happened is, today if I look out, we have 500 million plus internet users in this country who are regularly accessing the internet through their mobile devices.
Right.
Each of these users are consuming anywhere from 10 to 20 gigabytes a month on their smart devices, or smartphones. And they're starting to spend several hours a day on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, all of that has been a result of data prices being crashed by more than 90%. And so I think what has happened is a new platform has emerged where, a bulk of the population is starting to spend a lot of time. In my mind, there is no better enabler for a very rich startup ecosystem. If you see what happened with the, web devices or the, computers in the US in the late 80s, 90s, early 2000s, we're seeing and what happened in China in the last 10 years with, proliferation of both sort of computers and mobile devices. India clearly has leapfrogged the computer revolution, right? And we moved straight to mobile, and 4G didn't even really have a 2G, 3G kind of revolution.
Right.
And I think India is poised to, create similar levels of value creation, obviously adjusted for GDP, but we will see a lot of value creation that will happen as a result of this, right? Now, you spoke about free internet and what is happening. Now, the reality is, companies like Facebook, are free and continue to be free for the users, but they are monetizing through. I think we will see some of those models start to take off in India as well, which till maybe, a year ago, it was very hard to see a large scaled up company being built on top of an ad-based model. I think today there are multiple startups that are taking that leap of faith and saying, hey, when you have 500 million users spending so many hours a day, and if there are so many eyeballs, there will be enough advertisers who will want to tap into that sort of scale of users, right? And so I think ad tech business models are becoming much more commonplace and are becoming much more realistic now than they were a year or two ago. If I take a look at transaction business models, I mean, the reality is, like I said, the fact that internet in India is close to free is actually a great thing, right? From startups like, Ola, which is on our portfolio, Flipkart and all the large ones, they all are benefiting from the fact that there are so many people, because essentially, what it's done is it's brought all these people online. And if you are able to target that user with the right product, with the right service, at the right price point, these users, I have already started paying, and eventually more and more transacting users will also start coming online and will be willing to start sort of transacting online. And so I actually think it's a great thing that has happened, and hopefully it is just the beginning.
Okay, but at the same time, we are talking about two different things here. One, when we are saying that there are a lot of startups that are actually coming into the space and actually are looking forward to monetizing from the advertisements that are coming from the platform, and necessarily would not be charging customers for whatever the services or the benefits they're providing to them. And at the same time, there are companies who are charging the customers as well as maybe subsidizing the price because of the fact that they're also getting revenue from the advertisement. Now, how do you see this sort of trend? Is there a scope in India wherein companies can only monetize from advertisements? Have we grown to that level right now?
I think it's starting to happen. If you look at, last year, I think Google India crossed more than $1 billion in advertising revenue. If you look at Facebook India, I believe they're well past $1 billion in revenue as well this year. And so I think the reality is that the ad market in India is growing. Essentially what large spenders, large advertisers look for is essentially, do you have a large enough pool? Number one, are they spending enough time and are they engaged? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all these three things are true now in India.
Mm-hmm.
On the mobile. And so the reality is, I think ad-based business models, which, you know, like I said, maybe, you know, 18, 24 months ago, most VCs would dismiss as not a scalable, you know, business can come out of it. And yes, today is becoming much more realistic. Right? And you're seeing like the likes of, you know, TikTok and ShareChat and a bunch of other companies and Daily Hunt, which is in our portfolio. You're seeing a bunch of these companies now starting to scale, have, you know, very large number of users spending, you know, 45 minutes, 1 hour a day on the app. And I think advertisers will follow. And that's really where the ad dollars will go. So I think, A, that's possible. Coming to your other point, you know, are there business models which are more, you know, goods and services focused, where people are going to basically buy and sell goods online? Of course, there will be transacting, sort of a transaction on top of that, right? And so, I don't know if you know this, but if I take a look at, say, China, whether it's an Alibaba, whether it's a Pinduoduo, which is sort of the social group buying commerce company in China that is doing really well recently, the reality is today a large part of their revenue actually comes from advertisements. Although it's an e-commerce company, they make very little, or they don't make any money or any margin on actually selling off, you know, goods. But what they do is that they've created a advertising business model where merchants, in order to go higher up in the feed, or to, you know, through banner ads or through sponsored sort of listings, that's how they make a large part of the revenue. So as far as I remember, I think for PDD, more than 90% of the revenues are now coming through advertising, even though it's an e-commerce company.
Right.
And so I think we will see an evolution of these business models in India as well. And you know, between the two, depending on, you know, whether you are able to charge a, you know, clear margin through sale of a product or through an advertising model, a lot of these things will continue to evolve.
And India is warming up to this idea, is what you're saying.
It is, because, you know, I think merchants are becoming smarter and more competitive, right? If merchants realize the power of the internet, and the moment they are like, hey, you know what, today I can sit in my, you know, warehouse and I can figure out, I have, you know, stock of, you know, 10,000 units of this particular product, you know, with me. All of them are smart enough and are doing the maths to figure out, you know, what is their inventory holding cost, what is their working capital cycle, how much do they need to liquidate, at what price can we liquidate, and hence also they be sort of spending on increasing the visibility of their product on these platforms.
Okay, interesting. And you know, Matrix recently raised a new fund. It's a $300 million fund that Matrix recently raised. Now, how would you like to invest this money? Which will be the core areas wherein you would like to put this money into? And you know, if I were to say that, you know, you conventionally invested in early stage and some growth stage companies. Is that going to be the game plan as we go forward, or there will be any specific change in the strategy?
The short answer is we plan to invest it profitably. But let me give you a little bit more sort of nuance around our strategy. So honestly, there is not, you know, from a strategy level, there has not been a lot of change, Priyanka. We plan to, you know, we have been executing to our strategy since, you know, early part of 2010-11 when the internet really opened up in India. And we plan to continue to stick to that strategy. Obviously, there have been a bunch of learnings that we have over the years. There are investments that that haven't worked out. There are investments that we have made that have worked out really well. And so we plan to take the learnings from all of that and continue to execute to that strategy. So I think four or five key tenets of our strategy. First is, we will continue to be founders first and look to back the you know, the best founders that you know, come from this country. You know, internally, you know, while externally people talk about, you know, valuation and, you know, what is, internally, you know, we have a metric which says that, am I in business with the maximum percentage of the, you know, founders that we think are the highest quality founders in the ecosystem, right? Because I think our view is, you know, while every company will have its short-term ups and downs, eventually the best quality founders create the highest quality outcomes, right, and the largest outcomes. And so I think that's something that we will continue to do, which is, you know, try and get in business with the best quality founders at a very early stage. So that's number one. Number two, we plan to obviously continue to be focused on tech and tech-enabled businesses.
Okay.
So whether it's consumer internet, mobile, enterprise SaaS, we will continue to do that. Third is, I think we will selectively invest in high-quality consumer products, right? So I don't know if you're aware of this term called DINWIDS, which is digitally native, vertically integrated brands.
Okay.
A bunch of these companies have done really well globally. And so, for example, if you look at Harry's, or you look at Dollar Shave Club, or you look at a bunch of these companies which are scaling, or in shoes, there's, you know, Allbirds and a bunch of others. I think the entire paradigm of sort of distribution and owning the customer is being changed by these companies. And I think the same thesis can play out in India as well. And so we've made a few investments in consumer brands that are using digital as a primary channel for distribution, number one, but are also fundamentally changing the economics of the business such that they are able to make significantly higher margins by owning the customer experience and by actually making products that are much more amenable to customer segments that they serve, right? So there are millennials that expect something, and if you're able to fundamentally change the quality of the product and make good margins by selling directly to these people, what we're seeing is that people are willing to directly buy online from these brands. So that's the other thing that we will do. Last is in terms of stage, you know, we've always been a firm which, you know, wants to invest early and sort of be early partners to quality founders. And so we will continue to do that. So seed, series A, series B is the stage at which we invest.
Right.
You know, think of it more as if I had to, you know, make 100 investments a year, I would do maybe 40, 45 of them would be seed investments, maybe 40, 45 would be series A investments, and the remaining, you know, 15 to 20 would be series B. Right. So we are much more overweighted towards seed and series A, and we continue to do that. Every once in a while, obviously, you know, we will find high quality series B companies that we missed earlier because we didn't see them or we didn't pursue them earlier, and we will want to double down and even at series B stage to get into those companies.
Right. And
we've done a few this year and last year as well, and that we continue to, so that's, you know, basically the stage at which we play. And then obviously as companies are growing, the ones that are doing well, you know, we will, you know, double down and, you know, continue to invest more in those companies to help them grow.
Absolutely. So you said 10 to 15 will be in the growth stage, and this will be pretty much your very own portfolio companies wherein Matrix is already invested.
Not necessarily. For example, you know, if there is a company that we think is going to do really well and we missed it at seed or series A, for whatever reason, right? We met it, we didn't understand, you know, what the team was going to do. We weren't convinced on the opportunity, or we just didn't meet the team, right? And, you know, any of these is possible. But if we see that team at series B and we think it's still at a, you know, stage and valuation that, you know, we're comfortable with, we will definitely want to enter that company and make sure that we can be part of that story.
Interesting. So fair to say that with this fresh fund, Matrix appetite for risk has increased, given that you'll be investing in growth stage companies as well, whether or not you have invested in the early stages.
Well, we've done that. So it's not that we haven't done that earlier. So even if I take, you know, fund two, we have invested at Series B in a few companies, and some of those companies have done really well.
Okay.
So I don't think it's a change in strategy. I just think it's you know, we, like I said, we will, it's more about, you know, executing on that strategy, hopefully with more precision.
Okay, fair enough. Then will you be able to define some sectors for us? Because I understand, you know, mostly investors go for brilliant founders. There are some niche areas that now the investors are looking forward to. But when it comes to certain sectors such as the e-commerce, such as online aggregators, broadly these sectors are already taken and the winners have already been decided. Which are the new emerging sectors, if I were to ask you, wherein Matrix would like to put in the new money?
So multiple sectors, actually, Priyanka, and, you know, great question. And let me tell you about, I guess, because we don't think, you know, about sectors and we don't have a hypothesis and say, hey, we want to make an investment in this space. Like I said, we are much more focused on finding high-quality founders and backing them.
Right.
Let me tell you about some of the investments we've made in the past few months, and that'll give you a flavor of the kind of sort of companies and kind of sectors that we like. So one is transport is a space that has done well for us. So you know, Ola obviously has been a great success story.
Yeah.
But we continue to invest in a bunch of companies that are focused on solving the commute problem in India.
Mm-hmm.
Ola works extremely well for in the 15 to 20 rupees per kilometer kind of price segment. There is a large market that is underserved today at the 5 to 10 rupees per kilometer kind of price segment. And,
okay,
you know, we have made and we continue to make multiple investments in that space. So we've invested in one e-rickshaw aggregation company, which is solving the first mile, last mile commute problem around metro stations.
Okay.
We've invested in Gogo, which is a scooter rental startup. We've invested obviously in Ola, spin out of Ola Electric Mobility, which is focused on, you know, electric, bringing electric technology to two-wheelers and three-wheelers in India.
Okay.
So that's one area that we have invested in fairly heavily, and we continue to do that. Second is fintech continues to be a big story. We've invested in multiple B2B and B2C, fintech companies, and we believe that we're just scratching the surface as yet in terms of how deep that market is. Mm-hmm. And that's a sector that's done really well for us as well, and we continue to double down on that. Social commerce, we believe, is going to be a big theme. So if I look at version one of e-commerce in India, it was dominated by the likes of Flipkart and Amazon, and those are largely built on search, where a user has an intent of knowing what they want to buy and are sophisticated enough to come online, search for it, add it to cart, look at other multiple products, figure out their basket, and then check out, right?
Yeah.
And whether it's been grocery or electronics or apparel, pretty much that experience has been the same. Our view is that the next 400-500 million people that have come online are likely not going to shop in that manner. Their shopping experience is going to be a lot more discovery-led, a lot more social in nature, where people will help themselves and their friends discover products. People may do group buying, just the way we've seen some of it happening in China. There's going to be a lot more openness for people to try different brands, because that segment tends to be less brand conscious, as long as they're getting value for money products delivered within a reasonable timeline. They're much more open to trying those out. And so I think we will take multiple bets, and we've already made a few investments in that space, where we will look to find e-commerce companies that are looking to solve the problem for that segment of users, right? Mm-hmm. E-commerce in India continues to be 20-30 billion, give or take. We believe that it's going to be a $150-200 billion market in the next 5 to 10 years. And yes, the existing incumbents will take some part of that market, but there will be multiple other players that will play out, right? Again, and we've seen that in multiple geographies, including US and China, where Amazon and Alibaba are so dominant. And we believe India will be no different. So there will be multiple other e-commerce players that will come out. Like I mentioned, consumer and DinVibs is a big thesis, and we've made a few investments in that space. So we'll continue to do that. I think that broadly, hopefully, gives you a flavor of the kind of investments and where we are seeing most activity. Mm-hmm. Apart from this, there's always there'll be other sectors where we will find stuff. But I think if you ask me in terms of most amount of deal flow, the other area where we're seeing good deal flow that we haven't yet made an investment, but we continue to see exciting opportunities, is agri tech and B2B.
Okay.
So we haven't done something recently, but like I said, we think that that's an area where we'll see a lot as well.
All right. And Tarun, even as we talk about so many hard-hitting issues that the industry is currently seeing, I always try and make sure that I talk to investors as well as entrepreneurs on the work-life balance. While it's very fancy to talk about the extra hours that everyone puts in their work, I always want to understand as to what extent is giving equal amount of time to your family is important? And in your case, how often is it possible for you to take out time for your family, and how important is work-life balance for you?
It's very important, and I'm not doing a good job at it. So I'm not so sure I'm the right person to answer that. But here's what I do, and I think some of the things I've tried to be more disciplined at, some things are less. So one is, I think it's about trying to weave the two with each other. I think it's very hard in this day and age to have a clear bifurcation of, this is work time and this is family time.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is that all of us are, working round the clock. The world has become a much more fast-paced place to be. There is very little distinction between, right from your devices, right? You use your computer and your mobile phone both for entertainment and for work. And so it's very hard to actually bifurcate these things. Also, especially as a VC, given that you are working across so many different companies, the reality is there's always something going on in some company or the other, right? So, last weekend it may be some company that needed some urgent help. This weekend it could be somebody else. And so it's kind of hard to bifurcate it. Within that, like I said, it's important to weave enough time for the two with each other, right? And so I think when it comes to personal health and exercise, I try to make sure I try and work out at least 3-4 days a week. It doesn't always happen, especially with travel, but when I can, I try and do it. I try to make sure that between Saturday evening and Sunday evening, there's always some time that I'm spending at, you know, home with my family and with my wife and my kid. Again, it doesn't always happen, but to the extent that, you know, one can do it, you do it. And then obviously you try and take time off, you know, maybe once or twice in a year, so that you get some time to, you know, switch off, reflect. You know, distance always helps you sort of see things in a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And even though, you know, work calls don't stop, and it's just stepping away sometimes and being in a different environment and sort of reflecting on what's going on. Okay. It does help you come back, you know, refresh and recharge with a very different perspective.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And on that note, Tarun, I would really like to thank you. Thank you so much for taking time out for us and sharing all of this.
Great. Thank you so much for having me, Priyanka. Appreciate it.
Definitely. And meanwhile, if you have any comments or queries, you can write down to us. Our email ID is mcpodcast@nw18.com. With this, we'll wrap up our very special episode of Setting Sail. We'll be back next week with another guest on board. Till then, for more news, views and updates, stay logged on to moneycontrol.com.